It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go on a lovely, lovely mid-spring afternoon here in almost level West by Cole Trump Virginia Stan. It's the 16th of May, 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us online. That's where the gang is gathering for the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours. This program is live every evening, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. It is windy in Northern California. There's an atmospheric river pouring over the area right now, but it's gorgeous here. It's about 80 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. The sun is shining, the sky is a magnificent cerulean blue, and I'm naked. Because naked radio is what we do here until one of these days we break down and go to video. Yes, yes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And if you pick out a screen name and a password at the chat room tab at HeadOn.live, you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Jimmy and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, since it is so windy, has chosen not to fold space and become man cave. You don't want your space folding getting blown around. No, you just don't. Also moderating this evening, pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, who says he just got an obnoxious update from Windows 10. I don't know what qualifies as an obnoxious update. I mean, they kind of all are. I mean, did this one, you know, do the at you, Steve? What? Oh, had to reboot twice. I understand. Well, that's probably somewhere in my immediate future as well. Glory. Every program here begins with gratitude, so thanks go out to our subscribers for the 16th day of the month. Thank you to Brock. Thank you to Reinhard. Thank you to Timothy, and thank you to Glenn. Thank you very, very kindly, and thanks as well to Tony and Chico. Thank you very much indeed. Let's see. So that what does that do to the fundraising goal for this evening? Well, the fundraising goal is at $503. That means we met Monday's goal. We met, oh, this is complicated, isn't it? Yeah, we met Monday's goal. We met $97 of Tuesday's goal. Haven't met Wednesday's and haven't met today's. So $503, and we are out of the woods to all the way here to the middle of the month. And it is. It's mid-May. Downhill to the Memorial Day weekend. I don't know about Memorial Day. I don't know. Probably I'll be on the air. I mean, come on. unlike practically every other radio program out there, I work holidays. So unless I say otherwise, you can count on, what is it, Monday the 27th? But if anything changes, I'll let you know. Brother Deacon Asa, Anatole said, where's the show? Brother Deacon Asa told me we are hot, straight, and true on both White Rose Society and HeadOn.live. Good. Good, good, good. So, let's see. We've gotten the housekeeping out of the way. I've got another one of those every damn day missives from Ron and Raleigh. Ron, among other things, is in charge of the every damn day department. So, King Donald, the orange, rolled out his new immigration plan today. I know. The plan was generated by Jared Kushner. I guess he took off time from generating the Middle East peace plan. The plan places emphasis on merit-based admissions, as opposed to family-based, like Melanoma's family and how they got in the United States. Or, you know, just how Melanoma got in the United States all by herself. On, what was it, an Einstein ticket, something? I guess because she showed particular aptitude for taking her clothes off. That's as best I can figure. North Carolina State University graduated, and for those who are not acquainted, North Carolina State University is a fine, fine engineering school. North Carolina State University graduated 6,157 seniors this past week. How many of these graduates have jobs waiting? This new immigration law, according to Dolt 45, is going to focus on English-speaking degreed people with jobs waiting. There's several elements to that. English-speaking, degreed, already got a job. Does the dimwit-in-chief realize that most of the people who meet those criteria are Indian? A massive influx of Indian computer scientists will undercut jobs and wages in the tech industries. Also, Indians are brown people. I heard a woman on national propaganda radio today claim we needed less brawn and more brains in our workforce, and that's absolute bullshit. The construction industry is down over 2 million right now, and that number's only going to grow. We need more skilled tradesmen for Trump to stiff on his projects. This stupid law is dead on arrival, as well it should be. So Jared needs to leave immigration alone and get back to presenting an untenable Middle East peace plan. By the way, what in the hell are Jared Kushner's bona fides to design any goddamn plans for the United States whatsoever? He's white, so I guess that's enough. That's plenty, Ron. I mean, that's the criteria for pretty much everything Trumpian. Mm-hmm. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, of course. And that's the day that we reserve for moments that just really, really, you know, make you make that noise in terms of right-wing intellect. Here's a right-winger now. His name is Daniel O'Day. Daniel O'Day. He's the chief executive officer of Gilead. I know, the goddess of irony was working overtime on this one, wasn't she? In the aftermath of all the sleazy filth that's taken place in Alabama over the last... And Missouri! Don't leave out Missouri. They get pissed off when they get it, And remember, the motto in Missouri is show me, as in show me your fetus. Right. Well, Daniel O'Day of Gilead Sciences just happens to have to head a company that made a shit ton, and that's a technical economic term, a shit ton of money on a drug. Well, let's let Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez explain the situation. He showed up in Congress today, Daniel O'Day did, and in order to defend the indefensible.
Mr. O'Day, you're the CEO of Gilead. Is it true that Gilead made $3 billion in profits from the sales of Truvada in 2018?
$3 billion in revenue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And remember, the drug in question is Truvada. Truvada. Among other things, it has been proven to be effective in preventing HIV infections, which is pretty important. So we've got the initial data point there. $3 billion in revenue on Truvada. Yeah.
Yes, in revenue, thank you. And very quickly, the current list price is $2,000 a month in the United States, correct?
The current list price is $1,780 in the United States. And just to correct, the $3 billion was a global figure.
Okay.
Well, you know, that makes all the difference in the world if it's $3 billion globally. Gosh, they're probably eating beans over at Gilead Science. Gilead. You know, like from The Handmaid's Tale.
For Truvada prep.
So the list price is almost $2,000 in the United States. Why is it $8 in Australia?
Truvada is still...
Ooh, I can hear Robert in Australia all the way from here. I know. I can answer. Oh, pick me, Bob. Pick me. Let's let Daniel O'Day give his answer first. Remember, it's $1,000. Well, little lady, no, it's not $2,000. It's $1,780. Get your facts straight, honey. But it's $8 in Australia. It's kind of a broad gap in cost. Yeah. On a drug that drew $3 billion in revenue in a year. Tell us about that, Mr. O'Day. Steve's off and running in New York. Gilead CEO, only $3 billion? I'll bet the poor guy buys off the rack.
Has patent protection in the United States, and in the rest of the world it is generic. I can't comment on the price in Australia of the generic medicines, but it is generically available in other parts of the world and will be generically available in the United States as of September in 2020, based upon Gilead agreeing to support
Thank
generic
you.
Entries 1 year
so
early.
I think it's important that we notice here that we the public, we the people, developed this drug, we paid for this drug, we led and developed all of the grounding patents to create PrEP, and then that patent has been privatized, despite the fact that the patent is owned by the public. We refuse to enforce it. There's no reason this should be $2,000 a month. People are dying because of it, and there's no enforceable reason for it. We own the core intellectual property for it, and as a result, people are dying for no reason. For no reason.
And, of course, despite what she said there, Republicans will continue to say, you know what, she's stupid. She's just stupid. She don't know nothing. She made that dancing video. Sounds pretty damned intelligent to me. And she asks some pretty infuriating questions. But And within what she's talking about there, Representative Ocasio-Cortez, is a really nasty little nugget. That we, the people, pay for research on the taxpayer dime, and then we turn the patent over to somebody like Daniel O'Day so that he can monetize it and profitize it. Among other things, he has claimed that the government's patents relating to Truvada and the prevention of HIV are invalid. Truvada's patents are valid. You proles, your patent isn't, because my patent makes me $3 billion a year, and your patent doesn't make me dick. Wait a minute, I'm already a dick. See how it works? Well, at the hearing where all of this went down today, because it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, representing Chip Roy from Dribbling Dick, Texas, or Chlamydia Springs, or wherever the hell it is he lives. I remember when he was moaning about wishing he could be back there, and don't look, Ethel, all of that a month or so back. He had a tizzy. That's a complicated term we use here in Appalachia. He had a tizzy in that same committee hearing, because some mean old Democrats were talking about the fact that the pharma fellers were treating the American people who need medication like some sort of vein of ore to be mined. It pissed off Chip Roy from Syphilis Springs, Texas, bad. I'll let you judge for yourself.
Mr. O'Day, do you make brentuximab? Do you know what brentuximab is?
I do not. I'm sorry, Congressman.
Brentuximab vedotin is the drug that I took when I was suffering from Hodgkin's lymphoma, a drug that was created, built, manufactured, developed, designed, created by a private company that made a lot of money.
Well, how sweet. They made a lot of money. Notice how he's pogo-sticked up onto the cross. They made a lot of money off that drug, and he took it once. Bless your heart. Yeah. And I reckon, since they made a lot of money there, Chip, from Gonorrhea Gulch, Texas, you must have probably had you some health care coverage that covered the cost of that there drug when you was having your Hodgkin's lymphoma there, didn't you?
And I'm really glad they did. I hope they make a lot more. But
me
to
too.
Sit here and attack
the
capitalistic system
really?
That produces and distributes medicine that's saving lives around the world?
Damn! Yeah, saving lives at $8 a month in Australia, but $2,000 a month here in Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on Earth now, today, in the universe, forever under God. Right.
I mean, it is just offensive.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I just cannot possibly understand why.
Anybody got an asbestos hanky we can pass over to Chip Roy from Herpes Holler, Texas?
Why we're spending time sitting here while I listen to people lecturing companies about making money. I hope you make a lot of money.
I feel terrible.
Fine, let's have this conversation.
But we can't, Chip, because you're busy crying, you sissy man.
this absurd attack on profit being evil. We don't go down. How much cash on hand does Apple have? $245 billion. How much has Apple done to go cure health?
I don't know how much they've done to cure health. Apparently that Hodgkin's lymphoma killed off a whole hell of a lot of Chip Roy's brains, because you don't cure health, you goddamned idiot. Son of a gun. I feel real bad for Ms. Roy and the little Roy youngins having an idiot for a daddy. I do. I feel terrible.
It is a good thing that Apple makes a crap ton of money making these things so that we can have them and distribute them and use them, and use them for great additions and benefits to the world. And it is the same thing in the medicine.
Anybody want to bet that Mr. O'Day left the hearing there and made sure that a big old Gilead Sciences money check went to the re-election campaign of good old Chip Roy? I feel pretty. We can look that up after the next reporting quarter and find out. Let's make a note of it there in the ad hoc horn research department, shall we? Brother Deacon Asa says, why is he so damn angry? He wasn't angry. He was sad. He was on the verge of tears. There was even a couple of tears, because he was a-thinking back about how if it hadn't been for the people that make shooby dooly dooby 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 bop bop bleep mab, that he wouldn't be able to be sitting there a-sucking at the public teat. And it made him sad.
Mr. Roy, I've been here since... No,
really?
Oh, he's gone. Oh.
He was so sad he had to turn around and leave. Maybe go and get calmed down by calling the little woman back there in Scrotum Springs. Yes. It was a busy day for idiots.
Wait a minute. Let's check back in, Darlene in Connecticut. Come along, Bob. Don't you know that Jared Kushner also has top-level security clearance? Sounds like enough bona fides to me. Hey, don't blame that on me, Darlene. That note should have been addressed to Ron and Raleigh. And it might have even had a subject line that said Ron, Ron, Ron. Steve in New York notes, my patent is bigger than your patent. Well, it's certainly more profitable, it appears. Ron in Raleigh, subject line, profit. We're not doing it for money. We're doing it for a shitload of money. No amount of profit is enough for these hateful sumbitches. However, you can spend too much money feeding them useless, hungry children. Yeah, you know, if we could just... That's what we need. What we need is some science. We need some science that can make sure that a fetus never, ever leaves the womb and that the woman just stays perpetually pregnant. And that way we won't have to feed them or nothing. But the Republicans can live on them. Well, I mean, not the way a lot of them would like to, but they can obsess over them. And yeah, right, yeah. The stupid was out in force over on the Senate side as well today, as the wife of Diaper Dave Vitter, Wendy, received her vote on confirmation to a lifetime appointment to the federal bench. And what's this, Steve? Congressman Crybaby, I think that drug did cure his mental health. Yes, yes. And Flavio says the United States of Pharmerica, one of the few or perhaps the only country in the world where government colludes with industry to fleece the citizens. It's the same reason New Zealand passed legislation banning military-style assault weapons in 2 weeks. And, you know, we can't. Well, true enough, Steve points out, subject line, useless, hungry Chirins. Oh, dear, dear Ron, if we feed Chirins food, they're only going to get crab legs. And then Louis Asparagus Gohmert has a sad. But anyway, for many of us, the last time we saw Wendy Vitter, she was standing staunchly by her husband as he explained that, yes, yes, he had in fact developed a penchant for visiting ladies of the evening there in his home state of Louisiana, and that, yes, he had been caught a-romping with women who were not his traditional family values marriage wife, because Wendy Vitter was. And she stood there, and he cried, and next thing you know, I'm walking around the basement of the Methodist building a couple of years later in D.C. while we were working on Ake, and the elevator goes ding, and out steps David Vitter in a pair of disturbingly shiny orange gym shorts and a t-shirt tank top. Yeah. But that wasn't where we caught up with Wendy Vitter today. No. She got confirmed by the Senate of the United States. Yes. She has her own claim to fame, though, because in addition to standing there next to her husband while he confessed to having paid no small number of prostitutes to probably do things with him that Wendy wouldn't, back in 2000, Wendy said of Bill Clinton, "I would have been a lot more like Lorena Bobbitt than Hillary." Although, curiously enough, I don't know. Nobody's seen David Vitter without his trousers. Nobody really knows what happened between, and nobody deserves to know, nobody needs to know what happens between a man and a woman who are married and sorting through the problems of that marriage, unless, of course, their last name is Clinton. So there she was. Wendy Vitter got herself a cushy lifetime job on the federal district court. This, despite the fact that Wendy Vitter is well known, infamous, one might say, for having declared that abortions cause, get the hockey puck, breast cancer. Yes. And if you think back several months to her confirmation hearing, you might even recall that when offered up a softball question, it'd be a softball question for anybody but, say, somebody on the Federalist Society's list of potential federal court nominees. When Wendy Vitter was asked whether Brown versus Board of Education, which struck down the Plessy standard of separate but equal accommodations between black Americans and white folks, when she was asked if Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided, a lot of hemming and hawing came out of her mouth. But the one word that she was unable to pronounce was yes. Was Brown versus Board of Education correctly decided? And sitting there with all those racist Republican senators across from her, she could not say, yes, it was. Wendy Vitter could not say that segregation is wrong. Because that's not how you get a job with this regime. That's not how you get on the approved list of the fucking Federalist Society. Oh no. Oh no. Yeah, like I said, it's going to be another busy evening here. And in terms of thorns in the side, I do need to move a little closer to home about now. And tell you about somebody you've never, ever heard of. His name is Bill Bissett. And he's been other things in his life, but Bill Bissett is presently the president and chief executive officer of the Huntington, West Virginia Regional Chamber of Commerce. That's why you've never heard of him. But I pay attention to our local media, and sometimes in your smaller publications, well, that's where you're going to find some of your thornier, thorn-in-the-side Thursday stories. Bill Bissett wrote an op-ed that was accepted for publication by the Huntington Herald-Dispatch. And Bill Bissett, the president and chairman and CEO of the Huntington Regional Chamber of Commerce, has decided that there are some people in the Huntington regional area that he just wishes would go away because they're not marching in lockstep with Bill Bissett, who, of course, is as maggoty a maggot as ever maggoted a maggot. He wrote, and he was referring to a previous piece. He wrote, "We need to change the struggle to stay to, we need to change the struggle to stay," talking, because I've mentioned the brain drain here in West Virginia. "We need to change the struggle to stay to maybe you should leave. I know it's a common refrain from some of our residents that it's difficult to live in West Virginia. Like many of us, I worry greatly about the population decline in West Virginia and where it may lead us. However, if you only see negativity here and have soiled to the possibility, what? Anybody else ever use that phrase in a sentence? Because I haven't. "And have soiled to the possibility that West Virginia can be improved and succeed, maybe you should leave." Well, according to Bill Bissett, that didn't sit well with some of his fellow West Virginians. And he apparently caught some soil for what he said. So he doubled down in this piece. And he said, "I welcome constructive criticism if you're also working to improve our home, even in a manner or with a goal that I don't necessarily agree with." You got to remember that Bill Bissett is a fiend of coal, okay? He'd be happy if they'd blow up every mountain in West Virginia and scrape off the coal, and shit, if they need to blow up Huntington, that'd be all right, because you know, coal's good for West Virginia. Coal is West Virginia. But wagging his finger, he said, "If your total contribution is the equivalent of social media heckling from the sidelines, you're hurting our improvement efforts and are part of the problem we need to fix." That's right. That's right. Bill Bissett, middle-aged white guy, feels privileged enough to declare who is and is not part of the solution in West Virginia and part of the problem. And if you're part of the problem, he'd like you to politely pull up stakes and get the fuck out of here. Because, well, he's Bill Bissett. And he's a snotty little bastard. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Right snotty, as a matter of fact, as he demonstrates to great effect. While the use of the struggle hashtag tends to be, in my experience, connected to the sadness generated from a lack of a nearby Trader Joe's, and, well, I gotta admit, that one kinda got to me, because I have lamented the absence of Trader Joe's here, because, well, damn it, I'm down to my last bottle of Trader Joe's yuzu sauce, from which I periodically sip during the course of a program, because it's good, and it's not as harmful as, say, rot gut tequila. That one stung, Bill. That one, it did. That stung. But what it boils down to is he's making fun of people who do struggle each and every day of their lives to survive in this hard state. So he says, while the use of the struggle hashtag, I mean, this is some serious world. He may just be a little pissant local Chamber of Commerce turd, but this is world-class condescension. The struggle you refer to is not just here in West Virginia. Poverty, bigotry, injustice, and hopelessness are not unique to West Virginia or Appalachia. We just happen to be better at it than most and have more of it. While the use of the struggle hashtag tends to be, in my experience, connected to the sadness generated from a lack of a nearby Trader Joe's or other esoteric conditions, esoteric. You know, that's, it's esoteric when, say, you live in, old Western Raleigh County or just about anywhere in Boone County or Logan or Wyoming or Mingo or Logan, and you're breathing poisonous dust every day of your life till you go to the doctor and they say, "Well, it's checkout time, bub." And then you die. Connected to the sadness generated from a lack of a nearby Trader Joe's or other esoteric conditions, I also understand that there are fellow West Virginians who do suffer from inequality, whether actual or perceived. So inequality comes in for some of the snide treatment too, perceived inequality, because that's not real inequality. That's his way of saying it's imaginary inequality. Don't you love Republicans? But at least they're, you know, at least people like Bill Bissett are out there admitting who and what they are. My chamber's stalwart commitment to the city of Huntington's Open to All campaign, both prior and during my time with the chamber, is well known and a source of pride for me. Mm-hmm. But the real nugget here is where he defends his right-wingness. West Virginia is a conservative state, and I count myself as someone who
leans in that direction, but not on all issues. When consuming information, especially from the editorial pages, whether in print or electrons...
Because it really stung him that people told him he had no business telling people to get the fuck out of West Virginia.
I gravitate to those views that probably don't fit within my worldview. Don't fit. He likes to read opposing viewpoints. And then say that those opposing viewpoints are generated because people are pissed off that they don't have a fucking Trader Joe's. This interest may seem obvious to some, but I think, as a society, we have moved to the belief that thought is either right or wrong rather than different or contrary.
Here it comes. This one's going to take just a little bit too big a bite of the plate, and the last you're going to see of it is as it goes over the deep center field wall.
Perhaps the most interesting notion recently to me is that an opinion can be incorrect. As someone who has worked in multiple forms of media, I understand that information can be incorrect, but can an opinion also be incorrect? Unpopular, uninformed, or even dangerous, perhaps, but belief, emotion, and personal perception are powerful guideposts for how we see our world.
Yeah. This genius has suggested that there is no such thing as an incorrect opinion. How about that? Oddly enough, I don't have much of a problem looking to history for examples of incorrect opinions. And yes, it's also an opinion that turned out to be dangerous, but it was incorrect in the first place. For instance, back about, 90-some years ago, there were these people on this planet who had an incorrect opinion that a certain other group of people had all the money and were manipulating the money to keep the bigger group of people from being happy. This incorrect opinion, among other opinions, caused the bigger group of people to try to murder every last one of the smaller group of people. And it was all based on an opinion. The bigger group of people also had an opinion that there was something that existed called genetic superiority or racial purity. These incorrect opinions, of course, played into the attempted murder of the smaller group of people as well. But Bill Bissett is not going to let any of that sort of thing slow him down. Because he's sure that there's nothing wrong with any opinion. Not too awfully long back, a fellow in Western PA had an incorrect opinion that a certain group, curiously enough, comprised of the same people that the other group, years and years before, had tried to murder to the last human being, that group was hell-bent on overwhelming white people in this country with brown people from countries south of this country. So the guy who held that incorrect opinion, because it was not even remotely true, And opinions based on non-facts are simply fantasies, which means, again, that they are not true. Well, he picked up his freedom protector and went down to a little neighborhood called Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh and slaughtered 11 people, 11 mostly old people, anywhere from 50-something up into their 90s, because of that incorrect opinion. Another guy had the same incorrect opinion and shot up another religious establishment operated by that same small group of people, and then called the police and said, "I just shot up that place because I'm trying to save my country from the Jews." Poor Bill Bissett claims to have been an army officer and brays a little bit about what he learned about leading people and how you gotta pray. If you're gonna criticize somebody, you gotta praise somebody else. That seems rather a bit formulaic for my liking. So I guess in his world, if he criticized, say, some liberal for wanting a Trader Joe's, he would then praise somebody for thinking that America's being overrun by brown people because Jews are trying to overwhelm white Christians or something. Because it's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and that's just how Republican brains work. It's on display each and every day all around the country. As a matter of fact, a lawsuit has recently been filed. A creep by the name of Larry Klayman, who runs an outfit and founded it called Freedom Watch. Well, Larry Klayman has filed a lawsuit against the government of the United States. Yes. The complaint is filed with the United States District Court in Washington, D.C., and seeks an order compelling the Department of Department of Homeland Security to investigate, wait for it, you know it's coming, Representative Ilhan Omar. Because he says that Representative Ilhan Omar ain't really no American citizen. He's worked this dodge before. And he says that she committed marriage fraud in violation of the Immigration Marriage Fraud Amendments Act of 1986. Meanwhile, he has turned a blind eye to the repeated violations of the Emoluments Clause of the actual Constitution by Donald J. Trump and his skeevy business interests. He wants 5 years in prison for Ilhan Omar because he says she knowingly entered into a marriage for the purpose of evading any provision of the immigration laws. He claims that she wasn't really a refugee. He says that she's joined organizations that provide support to terrorism, including but not limited to the Council on American-Islamic Relations, which is actually less of a terrorist organization than Larry Klayman's Freedom Watch. He says that she married her brother. And every last bit of this is, of course, a bunch of racist, bilious horse shit. He says that she was a fake refugee. A writ of mandamus, Rita Mandamus, you know her, dances fruit on the hat with the fruit on it, Rita Mandamus. No, a writ of mandamus should issue and defendant should be ordered to immediately commence a thorough and bona fide investigation. Oh, they can't just do a thorough investigation, it has to be a bona fide one. Goddamned idiots. And hold an evidentiary hearing and, if necessary, institute deportation proceedings and a criminal referral. No, really. They seem to be of the opinion that she's married to two different men. You know, she's committed bigamy. I got two husbands and it's mighty bigamy. Yeah. And the whole article, which is from a sleazy right-wing website, does nothing to support its case but cite other sleazy right-wing websites that cite other sleazy right-wing websites. Ilhan Omar is driving these people out of their tiny minds because she is daring to stand up and speak to them like a real, live, fully empowered citizen, human being, woman, and worst of all, equal. Yes. Yes. And then, of course, there's the Rashida Tlaib business with people like sleazy Liz Cheney, daughter of Dick, who is who took a statement. Well, we talked about that. Women demanding to be equal to white-wing men is something up with which they cannot put. Checking back into the mailbag, Ron in Raleigh says, hey, did you hear some Republican said that fertilized frozen embryos are not in fact children? So that you only protect fertilized embryos if they're attached to a woman. The anti-abortion laws being passed are not to protect embryos. It's, in fact, to control the woman. Exactly. Yeah, we talked about that here. And it wasn't just anybody who said that. It was the actual sponsor of the legislation in Alabama. Peddling for public dollars or dealing the dopes. This from Steve on the West Coast. So here's a dumb question. How much law with teeth in it do you have to create and enforce so that corporatism will be made felonious? Because just about everybody party to the lunacy knows that it is this and only this. Especially as it is killing us. Time out. Pollen. Are we at the stage of needing to talk about making constitutional amendments for almost every crime against ourselves in order to find we can really do nothing? Oh, right, we've already been there. I know. But we can't quit talking about it because that way lies surrender. I don't know about you, but I refuse. Note from Tracy, false fucking equivalency. As I sit here typing this email on my iPhone, I'm wondering how this asshole is comparing the profits from Apple to life-saving drugs. Oh, we're back to Chip Roy from Syphilis Springs. What the entire fuck? Yes, Apple products are high as I am black, but goddamn, I have a choice as to whether or not to buy an iPhone, and this choice will not impact my health in any shape, form, or fucking fashion. On the other fucking hand, if I had HIV, I would have no fucking choice but to pay whatever the price in order to live. You see the difference. you recycled piece of human excrement, Representative Roy. These useless evil bastards are beyond disgusting, and I pray for the day that they all rot in the special place in hell that is reserved for them. Okay, I'm done with my rant, by the way. In order to keep you from reaching for the rot gut, your fix of yuzu sauce will be in the mail soon. Thank you, Tracy. Bless your heart. Yeah, that struck me as kind of... Because that's what it is, you know. A $1,500 iPhone is exactly the same thing, at least in the scrambled brains of Chip Roy of Dribbling Dick, Texas, as life-saving, life-preserving medication that costs $8 in Australia, but $2,000 here in the land of the free and the home of the rubes. I mean, brave. This from our pal Dave from the Blind. Bob, as a liberal would-be business owner, the real pretend business of Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Service, I would remind our maggoty brothers and sisters, if you're going to crawl up on the cross, you have to damn well use a licensed professional crucifixion and martyrdom specialist like those of us at Crazy Dave's Crucifixion Services. We're right. We'll give any of my Trump-loving maggot brothers a Republican discount on crucifixion services, normally $10,000 for full-service crucifixions. Republicans can go for the low, low price of $500,000 for crucifixion. This is following in the footsteps of Big Pharma. Remember, crucifixions are pre-existing conditions under Republican health care. Signed, your buddy Dave, reporting from the Blind. Dave gets a cowbell. Absolutely. Thank you, Dave. Subject line, incorrect opinion, courtesy of Lee in New York. May I suggest a low-hanging forbidden fruit? All religions tell the believers that only their God is the true God and their religion is the only true religion. Looking purely at the numbers, the majority of the believers have an incorrect opinion. Ooh, that one's going to leave a mark. Well done, Lee. Well done. Lee further observes that Freedom Watch is trying to prove that being right twice a day is not necessary, and they are in no wise jealous of stopped clocks. Randy says, doesn't the Bible say that money is the root of all evil? I may now know more about the Bible than I want to know. No, actually, Randy, it says the love of money is the root of all evil. Because, see, you can take a dollar and you can buy food and you could give it to somebody who doesn't have any food. That's not evil. It's the people who love the money. The ones that I refer to as the grubbers, who sit around staring at their computer screens. Ooh, look at that! I just made another profit out at the 16th decimal point. Fuck me! I'm a genius. Yeah, those kind of people. Yeah, I just shorted on an order of water for Puerto Rico. Yay me! Mm-hmm. You get the distinction, I trust. So, $503 to raise to get to come up even and not be looking at quite such a terrifying potential Friday on the front porch community made miracle. And that's where we still stand here at the end of the first hour and the end of the first hour's filibobster. It being a Thursday and all, though, let's take a break and check in with Brad and Desi and see what they're up to. Hi, guys.
It's Thursday, May 16, 2019.
CAL FIRE says that the campfire actually started in two separate locations, but that both ignitions were started by PG&E lines.
Utility company power lines caused deadliest fire in California history.
ExxonMobil knew exactly that climate change was real and man-made as far back as 1970.
Carbon dioxide in the atmosphere hits disturbing milestone just as Exxon predicted decades ago. Delaying action on climate change could cost investors more than $1 trillion. Plus,
plant-based alternatives to meat might be considered fake, but the growth of the industry is very real.
Burger King takes the impossible Whopper nationwide.
All of those impossibilities and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Bad news for vegetarians. America is running out of impossible burgers. I know, it seems unlikely.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I think we all knew this was going to happen, but we now have the official cause of the fire that burned down paradise last year.
Yes, that's true. The California Department of Forestry confirmed on Wednesday that the deadly and devastating Camp Fire that obliterated the town of Paradise, California last November was caused by aging electrical transmission lines owned by Pacific Gas and Electric. The most destructive fire in state history, it killed 85 people and destroyed nearly 19,000 homes and buildings. PG&E has since filed for bankruptcy protection to deal with the flood of lawsuits from catastrophic fires caused by its equipment over the last 2 years. The utility's new CEO pledged to state lawmakers on Wednesday to implement new policies to reduce the risk of catastrophic fires in the future.
Isn't it time that California simply take over PG&E at this point after deadly failure after failure like this?
That is under consideration because PG&E may also potentially face criminal charges.
And this supports your argument that you've offered for many years that these power lines ought to be buried. That ought to be part of the Green New Deal.
Meanwhile, the insurance industry is beginning to grapple with the mounting costs of climate impacts. It's now the top concern of the insurance industry. In the annual survey of insurance companies released this week by the Society of Actuaries, insurers listed climate change as the biggest risk facing their industry, by far. Failure to act on climate change is a big risk for investors, too. A new global assessment from the United Nations Environment Finance Initiative brought together 20 global fund managers to measure the impact of climate change on 30,000 of the world's largest listed companies. The report that they released this week calculated that further delay in tackling climate change could cost companies about $1.2 trillion worldwide over just the next 15 years.
But we can't afford to do anything about climate change, right?
That's what Republicans say.
They do.
And this week, scientists at Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii announced that the planet's atmosphere has now reached 415 parts per million of carbon dioxide due to human activity. The last time CO2 levels were this high, humans didn't exist. But ExxonMobil nailed it. Internal company documents revealed in a blockbuster expose by Inside Climate News show that all the way back in 1982, Exxon's own scientists informed its executives that burning fossil fuels would increase atmospheric CO2 to around 415 parts per million by 2020. And they predicted it would raise global temperatures nearly a full degree Celsius, causing major disruptions to the planet's stable climate. They were right about both targets.
They knew when this was going to happen for the first time in human history, and they knew to cover it up with millions of dollars.
And that's exactly what freshman Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York said when she slammed ExxonMobil in a fiery speech at a rally this week at D.C.'s Howard University to promote the Green New Deal. Ocasio-Cortez slammed polluters and politicians who claim the cost of fighting the climate crisis is too much.
What is too much for me is the fact that ExxonMobil knew exactly that climate change was real and man-made as far back as 1970, and instead of being part of the solution, they paid millions of dollars to lobby and lie and confuse the American public about it, endangering generations to come. That is too much for me.
And finally, a bit of good news. Fast food giant Burger King says its recent market test of the meat-free Impossible Whopper in St. Louis was so successful, it will roll out the plant-based burger patty to all of its more than 7,000 stores nationwide. It's just the latest and largest fast food chain to offer consumers meat-free choices. Eating less meat is just one way individuals can reduce their impact on the planet.
Very cool. You know, Del Taco's Beyond Taco is also delicious.
Good.
Better than their meat taco. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ba-da-da, ba-da-da. Yeah, we are into the second hour of the broadcast. And, hey, big thanks going out to our buddy, our friend of long-standing, Will, in Chicago, who just took us down to only $478 to go. That's huge. Thank you. And, you know, Steve on the West Coast started something, and you know how it runs in the fraternity of Steves. One Steve does something, another Steve follows suit. Subject line, crucifixion accessories. Steve in New York says, you have your cross, you have your executioner service, but wait, there's more. Here at Steve's Crucifixion Video Emporium, we can provide a beautiful photo album of your leap up onto the cross. We offer photo packages with many multiple wallet-sized photos, or you can buy our deluxe package and we will film your crucifixion on our state-of-the-art digital equipment. Our video package will include 10 DVDs for you to give to your surviving kin. Call us at 1-800-777-INRI. That's right, 1-800-777-INRI. That's right, it stands for I'm Nailed Right In. Call now before we're all booked up. Our calendar is filling quickly because there are many aggrieved, self-crucifying Republicans out there. Bouncing it back to Steve on the West Coast, lies on its own feet. Opinions are based on a lack of information anyway. If you're sincere and not a mendacious coward, you will express an honest opinion, a thing liable to falsification. If you're wrong, it's still an opinion, a statement that doesn't implicate its user. If you're the fucking coward mentioned previously, or a fool, it is always a fucking lie in the first case, or an opinion in the second, and so a correct opinion only in the second, since only a mad hatter can find a correct lie, probably under his fucking hat. Regards, Steve, on the West Coast. You guys are on a roll this evening, no doubt about it. And seeing as how it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, did you ever, when you were a kid and you were out on the playground, was there ever this, did you have one of those scrawny little pissant classmates who tried to cover for his scrawny pissantness by being a rough, tough-talking wannabe bully? Well, if you did, and I did, you're not going to have any problem recognizing the psychological pathology involved with the following story. Over on firing line with Margaret Hoover, one of America's more, shall we say, bellicose members of the Senate, Tom Cotton of Arkansas, was asked about our attempt, the Republican attempt, to rush us into a war even more stupid than Afghanistan, even more stupid than Iraq, and more stupid than both of them combined. Margaret Hoover, and I don't know where a question like this comes from, but Margaret Hoover asked him, could we win a war with Iran? And Tom Cotton behaved like that scrawny, needle-necked little asshole out on the playground. Oh, for pity's sakes. We gonna do this now? Had it queued up. Sometimes the magic doesn't work. But I don't give up that easily. Oh, hell no, I don't. Yeah, here we go. Let's try again. Works better if you press the magic button, Bob, and let the audio actually play.
Could we win a war with Iran?
Yes.
That didn't take you a second.
Two strikes, the first strike and the last strike.
What are the conditions or the circumstances that would justify going to war with Iran?
Well, if Iran struck out militarily against the United States or against our allies in the region, then I would certainly expect a devastating response.
Devastating. Yeah, interestingly, he doesn't say who would be the one getting devastated, and I have a feeling in the long run it would be us, because our victory in Iraq has proven to be devastating to us. Our victory in Afghanistan has been pretty devastating to us. But did you catch his answer? That's why I said he's like one of those little pissants on the playground. Yeah, you know what? I'll beat you up. I'll knock you down with two punches, the first one and the last one. Which is a smart-ass way of saying one shot. When he says the first strike and the last strike, what this evil bastard is saying is that he wants to engage in first strike nuclear warfare. I meant to ask. Do we still have anything that even vaguely resembles an anti-war movement in this country? I mean, I know Code Pink's still out there, bless their hearts. Is anybody mobilizing against this shit? And remember, the distinction between organizing and mobilizing is organizing is what you do when you've got a long-term problem. Mobilizing is what you do when they're on your goddamn porch. Are we? Anybody doing sit-ins at Tom Cotton's office saying no nuclear first strikes on Iran? Because there's no such thing as a two-strike war. He seems to think that the Iranians are a bunch of sissies who will say, oh, well, you know, if the United States has hit us, you know, son of a gun, I guess we better surrender right away. And moreover, the fact that he describes it in terms of strikes. I don't think you're going to beat Iran without marching into Iran. Which may very well prove for our decimated and overextended and worn-out military, it may prove to be a bit like marching into a meat grinder. Or perhaps they will engage in what the Romans referred to as Fabian warfare. That seemed to work fairly well for the Iraqis. They just dissipated, all of those troops, for the most part, just disappeared into the desert, and the next thing you know, our soldiers, many of whom were members of the poverty draft, well, they just started blowing up along the side of the road, and there really wasn't many people to actually shoot at. Certainly wasn't anybody wearing uniforms and lining up all Marcus of Queensberry rules like at about 100 yards distance and blazing away like we'd kind of like for them to. No. And what's that, Steve, in New York? Tom Cotton. Oh, Tom. Cheney be thy name. Wait a minute. Yeah, that's worth it. Cheney be thy name. The first strike and the last strike. Yeah, see? I'm tough. I'm all butch and shit.
Struck out militarily against the United States or against our allies in the region, then I would certainly expect a devastating response.
And did you notice the caveat in that? If they struck out against the United States, okay, I don't think they're going to do that. Recently, a British general said, no, there's no increased threat from the Iranian troops on the ground fighting ISIS. Nope, not at all. And the poor
dumb, bloodthirsty freaks in the White House. Oh, no, he don't know what he's talking about. Yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. James in Illinois answering my question says, I have Medea Benjamin on Facebook. She's constantly engaged in countering the Orange Menace. I love her. She's good people. And I hope they have enough of an organization to mobilize when this shit starts. Because remember, this is the Trump regime we're talking about here. We're not even going to engage in the sham of debating the war. Because, see, way, way, way back, a bunch of, all the Republicans and a bunch of apparently not bright enough to figure shit out Democrats voted in favor of something called the Authorization of Use of Military Force, the AUMF, which these Republicans continue to maintain is still in effect, even though it was supposed to be limited in scope. And it can be used anywhere at any time. But Tom Bloodthirsty Cotton, Tom Blood-Soaked Cotton, says, this would also apply if they struck out at one of our allies. And by one of our allies, he means Saudi Arabia and or Israel. Well, I've maintained for a long time that we may have ideological differences, political differences, military differences with Iran, but the Iranians aren't crazy. Neither are they stupid. Religious maniacs? Perhaps. But then again, religious maniacs is a big club, as evidenced by the recent action by the legislatures of the states of Alabama, Georgia, and Missouri in regard to women's bodies. But that just happens to play into these two so far failed attempts to create casus belli. One, the phony baloney attack on the empty tankers that, what's his name, Minister Flea in Saudi Arabia said, ooh, terrorism. And then they committed terrorism against a pipeline when you can't commit terrorism against an inanimate thing because an inanimate thing can't feel, terror. But you can tell that's where these folks want to head. Ron in Raleigh wants to know, tell me, Bob, will Tom be volunteering to tote a rifle into that Middle Eastern hotspot? I'm asking for a friend. Well, no, he doesn't have to do that anymore because he got himself all elected because he'd done toted his rifle. So now he is a military genius, almost on the same order of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who, we all know, graduated first in his class at the West Point.
Against Iran.
As somebody who fought in two fronts in the Middle East, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan, do you think it would be a good idea to go to war with Iran?
No, I don't advocate military action against Iran. I'm simply delivering the message that if Iran were to attack the United States, it would be a grave miscalculation on their part. And
oh, well, okay, we've got a clarification there. He's just saying, this is that ancient schoolyard bully bullshit of, you threatening me? That ain't a threat, that's a promise.
There would be a furious response. Now, we don't want to govern Iran. We don't want to rule 80 million Iranians. We want 80 million Iranians to be able to govern themselves.
We want them to govern themselves while we govern their oil. It's the same shit, different day. We don't want Iran. We only want the oil that sits underneath Iran. Why is this so difficult to comprehend?
Where are you on regime change?
What I want is to have an outlaw regime change its behavior, to rejoin the civilized world and stop supporting terrorism and trying to overthrow the governments of so many of its neighbors. Ultimately, it's up to the Iranian people and their leaders to decide how they're going to govern their country. But with men like those in charge of Iran, I think we're going to see what we've seen for the last 40 years, which is a revolutionary theological movement that's hijacked the powers of a nation state.
Wait, that sounds like the Southern Baptist Convention. This all gets so damnably confusing. What's that definition again? Let's back up.
40 years, which is a revolutionary
theological movement. Okay, the Southern Baptist Convention is definitely theological. Let's expand beyond the Baptists. That's not fair. Let's expand this to evangelical Christianity. They claim to want a revolution in the United States. I've got proof of it. They are theological. They are damn sure a movement.
Revolutionary theological movement that's hijacked the powers of a nation state.
That's hijacked the powers of a nation state. Or several of the several states. Yes. See again, Georgia, Kentucky, Ohio, Alabama, Missouri, and others are getting busy. It's really pissing off some of these states that Alabama jumped out there and done passed the meanest damned anti-abortion bill ever crafted. And they've sucked all the oxygen out of the room when it comes to shitting on the women people. So they're hard at work, because there's no point in being the in having the second most awful anti-abortion bill. Go big or go home. That's how that works. Tom Cotton. That little sucker, that little sucker sits around and thinks, you know what I got? I got me some presidential timber. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna build a canoe out of it. And paddle it right down the Potomac, right to the White House one of these here days. It wouldn't bother him if Donald Trump was beaten in 2020, because that would mean that he, Tom Cotton, could take a run at the Republican nomination in, say, 2024. But he's not going to step on his own business right now by not being a maggot, when being a maggot is the key to one's success in a place like Arkansas. No. What's that, Robert in Australia? Subject line, beautiful weapons. So do you have to use up all your beautiful weapons so you can order some more? Well, there's no sense in having them just laying around, Robert. You got to polish them and take care of them, and over time, you know, they're not as beautiful anymore. Yeah. By the way, we talked earlier about the confirmation vote on what's her name, Wendy Vitter. The final tally was 52-45. Bishop Willard found no reason to buck the trend again and vote against her, as he voted against that jackass birther that, as he did a couple of days ago. No. A woman not being a Republican woman who can't say that Brown versus Board of Education was correctly decided. That doesn't bother the white horse. Because, well, I mean, there's still a raging debate inside his faith group as to whether the decision was correct that, you know, those people are actually human beings. I mean, it was official, like, long about 1975, but it takes a couple of generations for that sort of thing to sink in. Curiously, confirming judges is pretty much all the Senate does these days. Yeah, they'll hold a hearing here and there. But they've got a stack of bills over there that they could act on that have been passed in the House of Representatives. But chinless Mitch McConnell, a beneficiary of a shit ton of Russian money, chinless Mitch McConnell isn't allowing anything to come up for a vote. And among the anythings that chinless Mitch is not allowing to come up for a vote is one particular anything, and that is affirmative steps to combat foreign interference in our electoral process. It might be helpful to note that the second sentence of the Mueller report, such as it is, reads as follows. The second sentence, not the first, but the second. The Russian government interfered in the 2016 presidential election in sweeping and systematic fashion. That's the second sentence of the Mueller report. There's no maybes. There's no weasel words. In fact, it's set forth in concrete action verbs. Interfered. And adjectives, sweeping, systematic. But guess what? Chinless Mitch McConnell, recipient of lots of Russian money. Chinless Mitch couldn't care less. Those of us who have been paying attention might recall that Chinless Mitch also couldn't care less back in 2016 when everybody but Chinless Mitch knew that the Russians were meddling in our electoral politics. And Chinless Mitch refused to sign off on a joint statement of that meddling because he claimed that it was all the doing of that one in our White House. Now, there is election security legislation sitting in the Senate, having been passed in the House, and awaiting action. The Senate Rules Committee met yesterday, where Roy Blunt from Missouri, who loves the little fetuses, said, "At this point, I don't see any likelihood that those bills would get to the floor if we mark them up. I think the majority leader is of the view that this debate reaches no conclusion. And frankly, I think the extreme nature of H.R. 1 from the House makes it even less likely we're going to have that debate." Ah, yes, H.R. 1. H.R. 1, the For the People Act, which does radical things like making sure that people who are eligible to vote are, you know, able to vote. It does things like address gerrymandering, voter suppression. But no, he McConnell refers to it as socialism, a radical, half-baked socialist proposal. That's right. Anything a Republican doesn't like right now is socialism. Anything. Anything. What? We want people who are allowed to vote? Socialism. We don't want everybody to vote. Shit, you got any idea what could happen if everybody who can vote did vote? Hell. I wouldn't be Senate Majority Leader no more. Then the Russians wouldn't give me no more money. Yeah. And as touching upon Russian interference, when The Hill called McConnell's office, his spokescreeps said, look, Mitch has done said it's case closed on the Mueller report, and that's all. Your tax dollars at work. But remember, the Russians did access two voter databases in Florida. And that news is of fairly recent vintage. We don't know which two counties, but we know they accessed two counties' voter databases. Now, the going explanation is that, well, they only got into the databases. They couldn't flip any votes or anything. But I'm so old, I remember when people were saying that they hadn't gotten into any part of the election system at all. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. We're at the halfway mark of the program, and again, thanks to Will in Chicago for getting us down below the $500 mark. We're at $478. Thank you. Thank you, Will, very kindly. If you want to help out, run over to headon.live, click on the contribute tab, and take it from there. Remember, our buddy Zed has a challenge on. He will increase, and there's four more slots. He'll increase his subscription by $5 for each of four new subscribers, either to Patreon or via PayPal. Isn't that great? Thank you, Zed. And thank you, Will. And thanks to anybody else who jumps in to knock things down a little bit this evening and make the community-made miracle on Friday on the front porch maybe a little less miraculous. Checking the mail. Second sentence of the Mueller report, Lee in New York says, people don't care about second. Engel and Truly flew the second shuttle flight. Aldrin was the second person to walk on the moon. Well, okay, sometimes we do. Hillary Clinton came in second in the Electoral College vote. Oops. Okay, point taken. Steve on the West Coast says, just World War 2.5. Just as we have the MAGA perversion, we have had the corporate military rehabbing of the nuclear arsenal. You know, after winning the Cold War, we had to start retooling all the hardware, along with the mindset, to protect us all over again, to make us so great. So great after the apocalypse, I suppose, says Steve. Only problem was, the Russian power elite were already gangsters and real estate tycoons and nouveau New Yorkers, political consultants maybe, voting machine distributors. No surprises anymore, I guess. That's one of the things I think I miss is my ability to be surprised. Oh, and oh, by the way, I mentioned our partners in peace, the noble, serene, high, gracious, puissant Saudi royal family. The CIA sent a friendly little memo over to Norway recently, because there is a prominent Saudi activist, well, the Guardian says Arab activist, living under asylum protection, the protection of the Norwegian government. And the CIA has learned that, well, the noble, majestic, serene, high, gracious, puissant Mohammed bin Bonesaw would like for him to get all dead. Iyad al-Baghdadi has been something less than a shrinking violet, or more, depending on how you look at it, when it comes to what a filthy little autocrat Mohammed bin Bonesaw is. It was serious enough that Norwegian authorities showed up on his doorstep, picked him up, took him to a secure location, zigged and zagged so that they couldn't be followed, and there told him that his life was in danger because that partner in peace, Mohammed bin Bonesaw, would really like to see him dead. Interviewed by The Guardian, Iyad al-Baghdadi said, "The way I understood it was the Saudis have a crosshairs on me, but there's no idea of what they're going to do. The Norwegians assured me that they're taking it very seriously. They came prepared." And he's not a Saudi. He's Palestinian-born. And he got sideways of the Saudis by writing about the Arab Spring. Among other things, he translated Arabic tweets into English and engaged in that most heinous of acts, sarcasm. He was sarcastic toward the noble, majestic, serene, gracious, puissant Saudi royals. He got chucked out of the UAE for being who he was and for speaking truth to power. And so he's been in Norway since 2015. And since 2015, he's been rather regularly and routinely zinging Mohammed bin Bonesaw. But he's got as good an attitude about this sort of thing as you can have. He said, "If they don't want to kill me, then I'm not doing my job." Because that's how the Saudis roll. You either go along with them, or they want to kill you. And the desire, he says, the desire to kill his critics is shaping up to be a long-term problem for MBS. Good luck. Good luck, Mr. al-Baghdadi. Good luck indeed. Oh, you want to jump into the conversation? You're welcome to. 304-574-8178. Or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Or the Stress Line, toll-free from anywhere on in North America. Canada, Merca, Mexico. And that's 844-THE-HORN, 844-843-4676. Looks like it might be time to start making some lists. And, of course, it's no surprise that there are potential subjects for the list. The list in question being good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical Republican men who are worried about the precious little fetuses. And at the same time, have a history of encouraging their mistresses to go and do something about a troublesome pregnancy. Latest entry onto the list is Republican U.S. Representative Tim Murphy of Pennsylvania. Now, he's got a strong pro-life voting record, mind you. But back on January 25th, his not traditional family values Christian wife, a woman by the name of Shannon Edwards, texted Representative Murphy and said, you know, you had no issue posting your pro-life stance all over the place when you had no issue asking me to abort our unborn child just last week when we thought that was one of the options. So when asked about these pro-life messages, Representing Murphy said, well, I don't write those messages. My staff writes them. I've never written them. I read them and winced. I told staff, don't write anymore. Yet Murphy's spokescreep had nothing to say about the fact that the boss there is pro-life until it might become an embarrassment to him from him being a rutting on a woman what ain't his wife. Yeah. He did at least have to acknowledge that he had had an affair with a woman not his traditional family values Christian wife. Because it sort of came out in Ms. Edwards' divorce proceedings. And old Tim there, who loves him some little fetuses, he is in his eighth term representing his district there, where they turn out in droves to vote for him because he supports the little fetuses. Yeah. Hey, let's run up to Wisconsin and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Flav.
I thought so. What's going on, Flavio? You sounded better.
Yeah, I know. Wow. Oof. I ever have a frog in my throat, eh?
Sounds like maybe. Oof.
Yeah, no.
I hope it's not the Attorney General of the United States.
No.
I mean, him being all amphibian-like.
Bob, come on. I'm glad I didn't eat or anything.
Oh, let's see. Yeah, it would be a ruined dinner in the Central Time Zone, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about you know, the discussions we've had via Facebook, however brief.
Yeah.
Regarding how complicated it is. You know, the temptation is to just say, okay, fuck you, Alabama. You know, you're going to be that way? Well, then choke on it. You know?
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, we're sitting...
But then when you think about it, you know, and it's like you said, the people that work in the movie industry are like begging, please.
Yeah, over in Georgia, sure.
Please don't do this. Because, you know, we've been busting our butts fighting these draconian medieval laws and... And if anything, they're saying, we need your help, not your censure. But again, my first impulse was like, okay, you're going to be that way? Because for the longest time, what was it in the UN? I know. I'm comparing apples and oranges, but I'll get back to that in a moment. Because at the UN, who supported South Africa? It was always the U.S.
Yep.
And Israel.
Sure.
U.S., Israel, South Africa. Who supported the boycotts against Cuba? The only people that supported the Cuban blockade, the sanctions against Cuba, were always reliable. The United States, South Africa, Israel.
Yeah, it almost begins to look like a pattern is emerging, doesn't it?
Yeah, my dad was a mathematician, and whenever I would descend into a bad habit, because he was a mathematician, his degree was in mathematics, and he branched out into aeronautical engineering because he was in the Air Force, the Brazilian Air Force, and then he branched out into industrial engineering, and then Mom got sick of him traveling the world over because he worked for IBM in Chile. He worked for Scandinavian Airlines Services in Stockholm. And so Mom got sick of him traveling and prevailed on him to get a doctorate in business administration so that he could be a university professor and he wouldn't have to travel as a consultant, right? Why do I mention this?
I'm relying on you for that, Flavio.
Yeah, well, yeah. So basically, it was the U.S., Israel, and South Africa that always boycotted Cuba. And I know I'm comparing apples to oranges when it comes to boycotting, divestment, sanctions. But it did work in South Africa. But it runs into a lot of questions, right? The validity of collective punishment. You know, can we do this? Can we actually do this? And is it right? You know, because collective punishment is against law, against international law. You can't punish an. I know Alabama, Ohio, Missouri, Florida, et cetera, Georgia, they're not sovereign countries. They're states of the United States, right? But on the other hand, who wants to go there? I mean, if they're going to be this way, wow. We're debating about an 11-year-old girl. Where is that? What state is that?
Ohio.
My God. And then there's this guy, Walsh. No, is that the guy? Says it's good that, you know, that abortion is legal because, well, then, you know, the rapist can't erase proof of the rape.
What?
Yeah?
I don't have my rot gut and my swirly straw back here. That's crazier in the head than a hog is in the ass.
Yeah, this Catholic guy.
I mean, so what? On a state level, most rapes do not have a statute of limitations. So we're going to wait till the baby can talk and put it on the stand, and it's going to say, "Oh yeah, I remember when I was created out of a rape." Fucking people.
Exactly. And that's when I grabbed the single malt, and I dispense with, you know, the ice and all the other amenities, and I just...
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's the kind of discourse, the political discourse. You know about this guy, right? This Welsh guy?
You're talking about the guy who used to be a congressman who's now a radio guy?
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad you brought him up because he's a case study. Because on the one hand, he's got a lot of people who should know better but don't going, oh, look, he's a never Trump Republican. We can do business with him.
Yeah.
No, you can't. The minute that orange menace is out of the White House, these people are going to revert to type. All the, you know, and there's some of them that are like Rick Wilson, you know, writing some really sharp, funny, incisive, vicious, cutting stuff that makes you feel really good about Trump. But I constantly remind myself, the minute he's gone, he's going to be back to trying to fuck poor people to death. You understand?
Matt Walsh, that guy, conservative Catholic blogger, whatever.
Okay, no, that's, I'm thinking of a different Walsh. The guy from, what, Illinois?
Yeah, no, it's not that guy. It's
And not Joe Walsh either.
Not Joe Walsh from Illinois.
No, not Joe Walsh, the rock and roller.
No, not that guy. Good God, no. No, this guy is conservative Catholic blogger Matt Walsh, who once said elections don't really have consequences. Oh, really?
Yeah, that's just a way of saying I'm going to keep being a dick no matter whether I'm in or out of power.
He's now pretending that Alabama's abortion law isn't going to be such a bad thing, which is easy to say when you're not going to be pregnant.
Which is easy to say when you don't have a uterus. Yes, certainly.
Yeah, he's making a comment literally no one was asking for. I'm reading from Patheus, Friendly Atheist. Walsh said that a 12-year-old rape victim who gets pregnant and who, under Alabama law, would be forbidden from having an abortion is better off under this bill because the eventual baby would be proved she was really raped. Just taking her word for it is apparently not an option. And he tweeted...
Well, you know, once upon a time, and I know you know these things.
I know.
Once upon a time, a woman could not testify in a court of law. Or if a woman did testify, her testimony had to be bolstered by that of men. Because women were deemed inherently dishonest.
Sharia law.
Roman Catholic canon law.
Well, yeah, which is what we want now, right?
Right.
We're all against Sharia law, but that's what we want. This guy actually tweets, and I really wish I had a bottle of Rotgut with me. I don't. But I wish I did, because he tweets. This is an actual tweet. If a 12-year-old is raped by her father, and the father takes her to get an abortion, the evidence of the crime will be destroyed, and he will go on molesting his victim for years. If, however, the child is born, his crime will be discovered, and she will be rescued.
No, it won't. No, it won't. He'll just say she's a slut. A 12-year-old slut.
Yeah, it's the way she dressed, you know? It's like, hell.
I mean, we are, and I've said before that the novel is problematic, but goddamn, it feels like we're living a part of the plot of To Kill a Mockingbird now. You know, because Tom Robinson got charged with raping Mae Eller. But in fact, he didn't. It was her daddy, Bob Ewell, that came home and caught her with Tom Robinson and proceeded to beat the living bejesus out of her and explained to her that she was going to blame him for blame Tom Robinson for raping her.
Yeah, I mean, this is so, I can't believe we're here. And here we are. I mean,
Okay, wait a minute. Can you really not? How many years have you lived with Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and that godforsaken Republican legislature up there that seems harder to get rid of than a dose of the clap?
I mean, I don't know how we're going to get rid of them. And you know what? You were talking about Biden. Was it yesterday?
Oh, you mean his fantasy when that the Republicans are going to come around and we're all going to sing Kumbaya and make America decent again?
Yeah. Yeah, what planet is he on? And he was...
I get worried every time we get near one of these things because I keep trying. So we're so far out. We're so early in the process. I don't want to attack anybody.
No, I know what you're saying, and yet, well, here's the situation we're in. Yeah, I can't remember his name now. We have the current governor, okay?
Oh, Evers. Tony Evers.
Tony Evers, okay. But, my God, didn't he run before?
Can't remember.
Yeah. And is this all we got?
Well, it's all you got that can win. I mean, I go back to, you know, the introduction to Wisconsin politics that I got from my dear friend Bruce, who has since gone on. You know, he's the
we can't put it.
But
Tammy Baldwin.
Well, no, Tammy Baldwin. I'm sorry. No, that's just going to piss people off, and she doesn't want to be governor. She's happy in the Senate. But there's a state senator, and I can't remember her name. I had an opportunity to meet her, and she's just as impressive as hell. And she took a run at the governor's race. And couldn't get any traction because she didn't have any money. And she was, I guess, too liberal. I mean, I remember when Wisconsin ran a bicycle salesperson, for all intents and purposes. I guess it was a woman who was the head of a bicycle company.
But here's the kicker. Here's the kicker.
And she got her ass handed to her by Scott Walker.
This is actually a progressive state. It's actually a liberal state.
Well, I mean, yes, Wisconsin is where the Wisconsin idea comes from, which is one of the most forward-thinking progressive ideas that's ever motivated a state in this country.
But the evil people got a hold of the legislature, and through redistricting, so-called gerrymandering, and, you know, I don't know how we can turn this around.
I mean, I've got some ideas, but that's all they are. They require the American people to actually want them. And that's the fundamental problem that plagues our side of this discussion, Flavio.
We don't have the financial wherewithal.
We don't have the money, and we don't have the ability to communicate our ideas. I mean, I give big. I'm so proud of Elizabeth Warren for standing up and speaking truth about Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, while other candidates have gone over there and wallowed. You know, it's that Mark Twain thing.
Even
never wallow with a pig in filth. You both get covered in filth, and the pig likes it. And so Elizabeth Warren says, I'm not going on Fox. I'm not going to help them make money.
Well, she said, lie down with dogs, you wake up with fleas.
Yeah. I think it would have been more folksy. I think it would have been more folksy if she'd done the wallow with a pig thing. But still, it's the same concept. But the thing is, she said that after other Democratic candidates have already gone and gone for a wallow on Fox. Amy Klobuchar has. Bernie Sanders has.
I'm still conflicted about that one.
Pete Buttigieg is gonna. Well, I mean, I understand why Bernie went on there, because Bernie is convinced that somehow or another he's going to get maggots to see reason. I think that's right up there.
He's insane.
I think that's right up there with teaching sheep to fly. But that's what he believes. Bernie doesn't believe there's a horrible systemic nationwide race problem in this country. Bernie thinks that everything boils down to class, and it's just class and only class, and it's only economics. Or at least that's what he seems to project. And so it makes sense for him to go for a wallow on Fox. And then the next morning, of course, they spend the entire news cycle trashing him with clips of him appearing on Fox.
Yeah, I wasn't... I think I posted it. I wasn't entirely happy with that. I wasn't happy with that at all.
And of course, there, you know, I was engaging my filthy little morning habit again today, and you know, there was Joe saying, well, how are you ever going to convince the centrists if you don't go on Fox? As if centrists watch Fox. I mean, there's got to be somebody, you know, there's got to be some people there who can be convinced. Well, you know what, if they are subject to being convinced, Flavio, they can be convinced somewhere else. And the case in point here is, again, Elizabeth Warren. Now, she did that whole 23rd Psalm thing. You know, behold, thou hast prepared a table for me in the presence of mine enemies, my cup floweth, runneth over, that business. Well, yeah. She went down to Kermit, West Virginia. And Kermit, West Virginia doesn't even qualify as don't blink or you'll miss it. You're going to miss Kermit whether you blink or not. There's no there. Their community center's been closed down. The biggest business around there is the funeral home, because these opioid manufacturers dumped 5 million pills in this little tiny bit of nothing community.
Wow.
5 million. Okay? But she went down there and she talked to the fire chief, who said, well, you know, this is Trump country and they may not like you. And she said, I don't care. I'm here to just talk truth with them.
I'm not in a popularity contest.
And so she
and so she
did. And they applauded her. And they listened to her. Except, of course, for the head maggot from the GOP, the chair of the GOP, mounted a protest across the street because, I don't know, more people need to die of opioids in West Virginia. And you know, I can't figure the maggots out.
But you know, here we're learning about
Florida. And my only point is that those people got a better idea of who she is and what she stands for in Kermit, West Virginia, than they would ever get from her sitting on a set at Fox News, talking with Brett fucking Bear, asking her loaded questions.
I wasn't happy.
Why did you pretend to be an Indian?
Yeah, I wasn't happy with Bernie being, although he handled himself as best he could, I still think it was a stupid idea because it only bolstered their already tanking ratings and advertiser exodus. Because let's face it, the business of America is business. And once you start hemorrhaging advertisers, you know, and that's what we all want. We all want Fox to hemorrhage advertisers. And then for him to go in there, that was, to me, that was a betrayal. You know?
No, no, you get no fight out of me over that.
It was a betrayal. Whatever he was thinking, I get his point, but I still think it was a betrayal. And that's why I like Elizabeth Warren more. And she went there, and she has this amazing, refreshing quality that she doesn't give a tinker's damn.
Well, and she also has an educator's ability to explain things and make it sound like she cares about whether or not you learn it, which, of course, before she was ever a politician, she was a beloved teacher.
Yeah, she reminds me of a Latin teacher I had back in school, you know, and I actually had Latin. I know that dates me so bad.
You're in good company. I had it too, and I'm sure you did much better than I did.
No, I got a C. Don't ask me why.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, hang on. You're the living embodiment of that line from Cheech and Chong's song Mexican Americans. I know you're not Mexican. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah.
Mexican Americans take Spanish in high school, make a C.
Oh yeah, no, because I was at a.
I got A's.
At an ebb. I was really bored, and I didn't concentrate because she was a by the book teacher and. You know, she wanted us to exercise the paradigms and everything. And I just wasn't into paradigms. And now, of course, when I teach languages, it's all about paradigms, models and, you know, diagramming and everything. And I was like, but I was, at that time, I was like really bored with it, you know. And I just, it was just a period of time that I wasn't really into it, and I was in ninth grade, I think it was. But this is where we are. I just cannot believe we're at this impasse where the rule of law is just non-existent. It's non-existent. I mean, you know, I don't know how we're going to survive this one. I really don't. I mean, but I kind of saw it coming up because, and I know you don't want the circular firing squad, but God damn it, when the Democrats had the House and the Senate and the presidency, what did they do? You know,
well, the House did a lot. I mean, I don't mind dealing with this one because this is pretty easy. The House did quite a bit, and they sent it over the Senate, but we didn't get our 60th vote until August of 2009 when they finally seated Al Franken. And by then, the economic crisis was in full flower. And the filibuster had not been done away with, and Chinless Mitch continued to own poor Harry Reid and beat him like a barred mule.
That I never understood what went down there. And then for Kirsten Gillibrand, I still hate
it. Yeah, we're not going to relitigate. I'm not trying to quash your speech, but I just don't want to relitigate that. I got a different reason for not liking Kirsten Gillibrand. Her politics is transactional. Back when she was just a little pissant member of the House of Representatives, she was more than happy to cash the NRA's checks and went around bragging about how she kept two loaded rifles under her bedstead
in case
anybody broke in a home invasion and she was gonna shoot them because she knowed how to use a gun. So that's enough for me.
No question. I'm just saying. But, wow.
How did
our side let it slip?
Well, we didn't let it slip. There was a manufacture. There was a financial crisis that was blamed on Barack Obama because the media is never a Democrat's friend, no matter what the goddamn Republicans piss and moan about. And so it was all about, it was all about the Obama recession. I remember, even though it was Bush's recession.
It was Bush's recession, of course.
And so that fed into the AstroTurf creation of the Tea Party.
Dick Armey.
Well, I mean, lots of people, but the Tea Baggers. Mm-hmm. And it was a well-funded a political insurgency.
That was amazing. I mean, yeah, were the Kochs, the Mercers, who else was involved in that?
Turd Blossom.
Right, Karl Rove. So I remember the Tea Party. These are the people that would show up with guns at
political speeches. If the Senate won't do it, Browning will, with pictures of guns. But and that's all prologue to where we find ourselves now. And we're not in a good or an easy place. And we are trying to tear at each other some more. I don't know. I'm sure you saw the story about the exchange between Bill Barr and Nancy Pelosi yesterday.
Oh, where he waltzes in and he jokes with her about the handcuffs.
Did you bring your handcuffs?
Yeah.
And Pelosi is just classy and says, well, you know, the sergeant of arms is handy if he's needed.
Yeah.
But what that proved to me, oh my God, it engendered, Flavio, an absolute torrent in the social media bubble of Nancy Pelosi, goddamn neoliberal establishment shill. But all it did was prove that Bill Barr knows how to troll. He knew what he was doing, and he knew how the purity police would respond. And that wedge is being driven deeper into what passes for the Democratic coalition day by day by day, Flavio.
That's frightening. That's really frightening. And I've been...
And I don't want to hear about... And I'm going to go ahead and say this. I don't want to hear about anybody's going to primary any Democrats. I don't want to hear about that. I want to hear about people pouring heart and soul into beating sitting Republicans.
Exactly. And again, I've been biting my tongue because, again, I'm human. And I want to lash out. But I've been biting my tongue and I've been trying to think things through where I hadn't before. Because, again, the temptation is, in the case of Ohio, Alabama, Georgia, oh, let's just you know, send a plague on those states. And then, you know, you put down the bottle and you say, okay.
Well,
there
are people in those states that are... Well, you
know
what the, you know what the last thing those people need is, Flavio? Is people who wouldn't know Arab from Zip City telling telling progressives in Alabama how to do their business. Or people who wouldn't know Coweta County from Fulton County in Georgia telling them how to do what they need to do.
I apologize if I ever was in that category.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm not pointing that at you. But
no,
it's,
I'm just saying,
but it's a real thing.
I apologize if I ever were. But I'm just saying the temptation is, because it's so disgusting. I mean, the 11-year-old girl in Ohio. Oh, fuck you, Ohio.
Well, and they're getting ready to go after Griswold in Ohio by making IUDs illegal.
Yeah.
They're not happy with Roe, with just going after Roe.
They're going after latex.
Precisely.
They're going after freaking latex.
Sure. There's a phenomenon inside the activist world where people from somewhere else go to a hot spot and start telling the affected citizens what they need to do, because the assumption is the people from outside are smarter and know more, and then they turn around and go home and fundraise on what they've done on the rednecks' backs or the hillbillies' backs. I've seen it so many times, it's sickening.
You're right.
Oh, won't you please donate $15 to help us in our efforts to fight mountaintop removal? If you do, we'll send you a canvas messenger bag.
Yeah, it's freaking ridiculous.
And it's disgusting. The trick, and some organizations, and I'll name the ones who are, some organizations are really good at listening to the people who have to live their lives dealing with these horrors. And most of what I'm talking about is in the world of so-called environmentalism. But yeah, it's best I not name names. But they come in and they say, how can we support you? And they engage in good faith discussions of how to accomplish goals.
Right.
I don't know what those organizations are, or if those organizations are out in the broader liberal progressive left world. It's been done. I know that. To come in and say, what your people need to do. You know, and there was a study years and years ago of the Big Greens that said, and Big Green organizations commissioned it. And the question was, why aren't we getting more return on, or why aren't we accomplishing more? Why aren't we winning more? And the experts on the panel wrote a report, and they came back and they said, you're not winning more because you're not trusting the people who know how to do what needs to be done.
On the ground.
On the ground there. And you're dribbling out money to them instead of making it possible for them to live and work and do what's necessary. And the next thing you know, you never heard of that report again.
No, I'm chastened.
Well, I don't think you need to be chastened, Flavio.
No, but
you're a man
saying,
of good heart and goodwill.
My first reaction was, well, if they're going to be that way, why not just strangle them? You know. But then I thought, okay, no. Collective punishment is against international law.
Well, I mean, no one ever died from being slapped. And if an affected woman in Alabama wanted to walk up to the Speaker of the House of Alabama and just slap him till his teeth rattled, and tell him and tell him that he was a shameless, hypocritical poltroon, and whatnot from there, you know, she'd be charged with battery. Misdemeanor battery. I don't know. Maybe they'd charge her with a felony.
Assault?
It'd be battery because she struck him, not assault. But maybe charge her with some sort of felony for doing violence upon an elected official. And then the people from outside get her a kick-ass lawyer who demands a jury trial and tells the jury, you have a right to nullify the charge. You have a right to set her free because she was acting in self-defense. I mean, none of this is easy.
That's what you're saying.
Dr. King did not write Letter from Birmingham Hotel Room. It's Letter from Birmingham Jail.
No, it's not. Yeah, Motel 8, we'll leave the lights on.
And it's not called civil disobedience because it's polite. It is called civil disobedience because it is disobedience that takes place in the civic sphere where everybody gets to see it.
And everybody suffers the consequences.
Well, anyone engaging in it. You know, it's Gandhi marching to the sea to make salt. It's heroes marching across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma. It's striking miners at Ludlow.
I mean
the term was invented by Henry David Thoreau because he refused, and he was a white guy.
He was.
But up in Massachusetts back then, they had a poll tax. You had to pay for the privilege of voting, and Henry David Thoreau said, "Fuck it, I won't pay it," and they took his ass to jail. And Ralph Waldo Emerson visited him in jail and said, "I'll pay your poll tax." And Henry David Thoreau said, "If you do, I'll never speak to you again. I'm here for a reason."
Isn't that incredible?
And, you know, Henry David Thoreau invented the term civil disobedience.
Yeah.
You know, it's not civil revolt. It's not civil revolution.
It was a pamphlet.
It's an act of being deliberately disobedient against an unjust and immoral law. There's so many examples. You know, Rosa Parks did what she did, not on the spur of the moment. She had been well trained and well taught before that ever went down. And she deliberately sat in that seat on that bus because her refusal was planned to trigger the Montgomery bus boycott because the community of color in Montgomery knew that they could hurt economically the Montgomery Transit Authority because so many African Americans rode those buses. But general boycotts don't work.
Because it would have hurt.
Because there's no way to muster the economic pressure to make it felt in a single place.
Right. It's a blunt object.
And so you know, and it was Irish Dave who sent me the story. So in Georgia, you've got union members of the film industry who are saying, you know, we went door to door against this damn bill. We did everything we could to stop it. But if you listen to Alyssa Milano and you engage in a boycott of the film industry in Georgia, we're going to lose our jobs. We're going to lose our union health care. We're going to lose our pension. And in one woman's in one woman's example, she said, "And I'm going to have to go back to waiting tables."
Right.
Because that's too broad a topic. On the other hand, if you want to write to Boeing, I mean not Boeing, if you want to write to Delta, and by the way, they're engaged in a filthy anti-union crusade right now.
Right.
So you can get a double bonus on it. You can say, "I'm writing you because I'm not going to fly Delta because you're being horrible union busters, and you didn't do enough to oppose this hateful anti-woman bill when probably more than half your workforce is female." You can write to the Coca-Cola Corporation and tell them, I've officially become a member of the Pepsi generation, and me and all my friends. And those are the people who can write those great big golf tournament money checks. Mm-hmm. And they do on a regular basis to politicians in Georgia. And so it just may get, it may just be focused enough to get some attention.
No, but I just wanted to chime in that the knee-jerk reactions are human. And I hope you don't hold us in low regard. The temptation is there to just say fuck you all. We're just okay. And then you have to think, yeah, but you can't. You can't. It's a blunt object. Boycotts are a blunt object, and that's not. But then the alternative. What is the alternative then? Okay. Boycott the BDS is BDS thing, because they're not sovereign states. They're parts of the union. They participate in the comedy, in the polity. What is the best way then?
I say you find out who's doing the activist work on the ground, with skin in the game, putting life and liberty on the line, and you support them.
Them. Like the Aik.
Yeah.
Like the Aikon.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've gotten the schooling, you know. But again, I just want to let you know, I think about these things.
Well, I know you do. No, you are a most cerebral person. You actually think about things and I don't mean worry in a bad way. I mean worry in a good way. You worry over problems and issues. And by worry, you seek solutions. You seek your own understanding. You seek your own enlightenment.
I tried to learn just once because I had a buddy I work with at an insurance company who tried to teach me chess. And that taught me, he taught me how complicated chess was and how it's such a wonderful game, because it really does humble you. It really makes you think, wow.
Yeah, I tried real hard, but all I ever learned from chess was that I was going to waste a lot of time and get my ass kicked.
Well, that too. No, but I did get an idea of the depth, how far you could get into it, and why it is such an intense game.
Yeah.
Because it does mess with your mind.
Yeah, yeah. Do you ever notice that you never see people engaged in a game of chess and each one of them has a glass of beer?
No.
And even those Russians who play chess in the park and shit, you never see them sitting there with a bottle of vodka between them and a pair of shot glasses.
No, you have to have your wits about you.
Yeah.
It's not... And, yeah, it's... Well,
if he does this and I do that, but he's going to do that. Oh my God! Wait a minute.
And, 3, 4, 5 steps ahead.
Right, and the geniuses are the ones who can play 9 moves out. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, they can. And.
And some people have a gift for that. They used to say of the great one, Wayne Gretzky, that what made him so great was that he could see where the puck was going to be long before anybody else knew they were going to put the puck there.
And he was Canadian.
And there was, of course, Ted Williams, you know, the last man to bat 400 in baseball.
Yeah.
And one fella asked him, he said, you know, when the ball's coming at me, it looks like a BB. What's it look like to you, Ted? And he said, grapefruit.
I don't remember that one, but that's funny. And I'm 53, and I remember a lot of things.
Yeah. But for as great of a hitter as Ted was, he always said that the most difficult thing in sport, I think it was Ted Williams, said golf was far more difficult than baseball, and the golf ball wasn't even moving.
It's pretty funny.
But it's about that level of focus and commitment and dedication and, you know, all those things from Little League. You know, Pelé, probably the same thing they said about Gretzky could be applied to Pelé.
I'm not much of a fan of him because he's become somewhat of a righty.
Oh, well, yeah, no. I mean, I'm not talking about his politics. But, you know, he knew where the ball was going to be before anybody knew.
You do know that he went to the dark side.
Oh, I know.
That came out.
I was just reaching for a Brazilian reference, Flavio. You got to work with me.
I know. It's just like, I'm not even, I have an excuse.
But I love the fact that Pelé's name is back in circulation, and not in a good way.
Oh, what happened?
Well, that is out on the golf course. That's their nickname for Trump. They call him Pelé.
Oh.
Because he kicks the ball. He's a cheater.
Oh, my.
I mean, there's a recent story in the last week or so about him stealing the ball of, like, a 12-year-old boy who was forced to play in a threesome with him.
Yeah, no. Pelé never stole anybody's.
No, but, you know, you don't kick the golf ball. And so the caddies and people around the course refer to Trump as Pelé for kicking the ball. Otherwise known as illegally improving one's lie or ruining someone else's. The best story, Rick Riley wrote a book about it. All these stories of Trump cheating. And Mike Tirico, the sportscaster, played with him and hit the shot of his life. It's not a 3-wood out of the fairway is not at all easy. And he hit it. Wow. He struck it perfectly. And then the green was actually out of sight. But he, you know, he knew from the sound. He knew from the fluidity of his swing. He knew from the way it flew. He knew it was going to be perfect. And he got up there onto the green, and he knew the ball couldn't. Mm-hmm. The ball was going to be, you know, pin high. You know, putt for birdie or whatever. Putt for eagle. I don't know. And,
I don't know.
And then Trump comes along, and it's down in the sand. It's down in the bunker. And after the round, the caddy comes up and goes, "He cheats! Oh, he cheats! Your ball! It was the shot! It was the shot of a lifetime, and he threw it in the bunker." Because see, and I know, as liberals and progressives, we tend to go, "Oh, golf," but. golf is a game, you know, Twain said it's a good walk ruined.
Oh, good walk ruined, yeah.
But that means he played the game. Because you got to play it before you can know what it is.
Right.
And it's a game that you play between your ears. You're really not competing against other people. You know, you watch a tournament on TV, it's like, oh, well, you know, Tiger, Justin Spieth, you know, two strokes separate them, blah, 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 Phil Mickelson, you know, only four strokes back.
Okay.
Well, they're not playing against each other. Nothing that any one individual golfer can do can impact the game of another golfer. Golf is played between the golfer, the ball, and the course. And 99% of it takes place between your ears. And so it's predicated, it has its arcana and its rules, but it's predicated on one fundamental thing. We're all going to be honest here. And we're not going to cheat. Because the only person you can cheat in golf is yourself. Because it is a competition against yourself. Why do you think that when it got taken to Japan, the Japanese just latched onto golf and went wild?
Wow.
It's pure Zen.
It's just yourself, huh?
Yeah. It's you against yourself.
By the way. Well, I don't know a thing about golf, just so you know.
That's okay. But you don't have to understand the way I've just explained.
No. You, the ball, the course.
Right.
And you're not really playing against anybody else.
And if somebody beats you, it's because they played the course better than you played the course. They didn't play you better than they played. No.
I get that.
I mean, if you're sitting there at a music competition, and you both play the same, Bach Bure.
Ein kleine Nachtmusik.
I can't remember. I love it. Jethro Tull did it once, that Bach Bure.
Bure in A minor.
Yeah. And you're going to be judged, each of you, on how you played that piece of music.
Right.
Well, unless you sneak over to your opponent with a pair of pliers and prang, you know, cut a string, you can't impact how they're playing that piece. It's between them, their brains, the music on the sheet, and the instrument. And so you're in competition with yourself and your own human tendency toward, you know, error and failing and imperfection.
Wow.
And in either instance, it requires character, Flavio. And that's the thing behind the equal sign on this, is that Donald Trump has no character.
No, he doesn't. He is... Yeah.
He cheats at everything. And it's borne out by how he approaches the game of golf. Which is pathetic, really. There's no point in going out if you're going to cheat.
No. No, it's... Wow. No, it... No, wow.
Yeah, Ron in Raleigh, meanwhile, says, that's why I believe in full contact golf, Bob. Makes for a more interesting game. God damn it. God, give me that mashing nibbler. Oh, I'm going to get upset. You're right. Yeah.
Hey, I was going to say, you have yourself a good night.
I'm going to try. I'm glad to know you're feeling better.
I sound much better. I sound much better. And I feel tons better too, because it's like, wow, I was coughing up phlegm repeatedly.
And there went dinner in the Pacific Daylight Time Zone, thank you.
And that was a good thing because I was taking an expectorant. Throws stuff
out of your
chest.
I was just going to go for the trifecta and use the word mucus, too, and just have done with it.
No, but that was a good thing. I was clearing up the because I smoke and everything, and so I was clearing up the lungs. I'll have you know that I smoke much less than I did when I was in my 20s and 30s. I think I have like 5 cigarettes a day now.
Good man.
I still have to have them. Also go nuts.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're down to 5, you can move to the patch or the gum.
Yeah, I'm getting there, but I still, you know, but at the same time, I've seen some massive improvements, you know, and that's the thing. My lungs are not as impaired as if I had kept up a 2-pack-a-day habit, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I just wanted to say I love your show, and I love you, and thank you so much for being there.
Oh, shucks, Flavio.
No, seriously.
I know you're sincere, and it means the world to
me. Virginia. I want to visit there, and I hope that I'm welcome there.
Oh, you will be.
If I decide to go out there, because I do want to visit. I do want to visit.
Well, I know you deal with visual impairment, so we'll probably cross climbing 500-foot rock faces off the list.
Yeah, no, forget that.
But there are some lovely walks in the woods to be had.
Yeah?
Down old railroad trails and things like that.
I love those.
And there's a surprising degree of good food and good drink to be had.
And there's
a ton of history.
I'd love that, so...
So, and you ever get this way?
No, and let me know how I can contact you when I'm out there.
Do please. So. I mean, you know, you've got my email. I answer it.
Right.
And you can find me on Facebook, and you know, I'm probably one of the most contactable people there is.
All right,
Flavio, you take care of yourself. Keep getting better, my friend.
All right. You have a good night.
All right. You too. Bye.
Take good care.
It's our buddy Flavio getting better up in Wisconsin. And over to, and by the way, we're still at $478 on the fundraising goal and about 18 minutes to go in the program. And it'd be nice to knock it down a little bit more. If we got it all the way down to $400, that would mean that we were only behind by 2 days, yesterday and today, and we'd have Tuesday out of the way. So if possible, you know, but, you know, I understand people have limitations. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Stress line. You're on the air. I hear me, but I don't hear you.
You want me, right?
Yeah, you. Yes, you.
I mean, that's me?
Yeah. You got to turn the other speaker off so you can hear your phone. You have to talk into the phone, not into the computer. Who is this?
I'm here.
Yeah, who is this?
I'm here. Pick me up.
Oh.
I've been there for 45 minutes. Come on, Bob.
Say what? It's getting a little confusing. You got to turn the other speaker off.
Oh,
I don't know.
Give me a chance. Just give me a chance. Just give me a chance. Come on, Bob. Give me a chance. I'll be concise to the point.
Okay, go.
Come on, Bob.
Who is this? You got to turn off the other. Hello. You got to turn off the other speaker.
Bob, that's me.
Yeah, I know.
I've been hanging since.
I know.
You 35 minutes.
No, you got to turn off the other speaker because you're echoing back into the program. You understand?
Hey, Bob.
There.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me. You're coming through fine. Who is this?
Yeah, I've been on like 53 minutes. I'll get on by just saying what I got to say.
Go.
The man trying to quit tobacco.
Yeah.
The Nicorette mini lozenges. That's what I got off of. When Al Franken was finally put his seat in the Senate, we only had 72 days before Ted Kennedy died.
True.
This is for Todd and anybody else that watches Washington Journal on C-SPAN. My wife was she's going once a week, like in the 1999-2010. And she was really good, smart, and she'd only call in to give the Republicans shit. And today on listening to Alex Jones, I heard that he took credit, for screwing up Washington Journal. His people, his minions, his Alex Jones bucks. He was talking about how they've been the Washington Post and all these other media outlets, and he claimed that Washington Journal was theirs. Basically, if you're stupid enough to believe in Alex Jones, he told you to call in that Washington Journal, and they're doing it. That's why it's all fucked up. Last point. I read last week where after the Democrats took back the Wisconsin House, before the Republicans left, they changed all kinds of laws. And this judge up there ruled that all the things that the Republicans put back into, fuck up everything else, they're going to let it stand. Bob, I'm sending you something in the mail with a stamped envelope so Bob Offlin can just mail it to you. $50. But, all right. I've been hanging for 50 minutes, Bob. I love you. Talk to you later. Sorry, bud.
I appreciate it, man. I don't know why you can't hear me, but I wish you could. I wish I knew who that was. Sometimes the magic works and sometimes it doesn't, because we were all connected, but that whole having the speaker going in the background is kind of what makes a mess of things. Thanks. And you know what? Those are good points. No sooner did Al Franken get into the Senate than boom, back down to 59 votes because of Ted Kennedy's demise. Well taken. And thank you. So we'll take that down to 423 to go. Ralphs says, "Don't make me make Crook come after you all. Don't make me sick Crook on you all. I've already done my monthly contribution. Please, somebody else kick in. Thank you, Ralphs. All right, let's go back to the stress line for a minute and see if we have any more luck. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Yo, hello? Okay, now what's going on with this?
That's me. No, Bob, it's not working. Anyway, this is Rudy.
Oh, Rudy. Okay, so, cool. Okay.
I don't know what's going on, Bob, but...
Okay, that may, yeah, okay. Appreciate it, Rudy.
Okay, I thought that might have been Rudy Rudy. I thought I recognized his voice. I don't know what's happening with the. Okay. Well, it's apparently not working for Rudy. But thanks, Rudy. Thank you so much. A note on the way out the door from, Steve on the West Coast, bug-eyed bug life. We don't have the commons, going back to a previous conversation, a conversation with Flavio. We don't have the commons. The concept itself is quaint, like a brass band on the gazebo. 70 years of making people comfortable in their solitude and loneliness has made us streamlined, high-octane individuals and seekers of individual rights, and inhabitants of empty cities filled with individual homes, toys, and distractions, more or less. All tolerable enough until the jobs and prosperity just went hard south. While the illusion of an online, internet-connected power base has made us consumers, because it was already owned, already, yes, plugged in. Even though right here and now we are stealthy cockroaches living and thinking in the darker recesses of the whole computerized shit pile, until what's starting to feel like the inevitable extermination, for cockroaches at least. Remember, it's the cockroaches who will worship us as gods because of the mess we've made of this planet. Back to the chess stuff. Steve on the West Coast says, I was friends with a chess master who couldn't play backgammon well at all. I don't think he could grasp the flow of the game, its unity of simple direction and goal. Same for the game of gin rummy. I used to beat him 50-50 or better on both with no problem whatsoever. I remember telling him I had only looked at the backgammon board once or twice, played perhaps two games in my life. He refused to believe me. He hated me, like a competitive friend. Well, maybe once you sink yourself into chess, there's nowhere else to go. By the way, James in Illinois reminds us the Wisconsin idea was liberal Republicans. James says, I don't know if they're hibernating. What the fuck? No, I think liberal Republicans are full-on extinct now. They were eliminated back beginning in the Reagan 80s. And from Lady B, just a question for the anti-choice folks out there who insist on staying in another woman's business, especially when it comes to abortion and incest. It's a weird question, but how many folks are walking this planet now, especially over a certain age, who either are or have an older sibling who was the result of a family member raping their mother? I'll bet many of them have no idea. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have been born. Hell, you're already here. But how long has your mother lived with that knowledge? How long has the man you called dad? Again, you're already here. That's great. You're probably a beautiful person. And your descendants may even cure cancer. Awesome. But are you really cool with that? How would you feel knowing your son-in-law or daughter-in-law is also the son and grandson or daughter-niece of the guy you met at the company picnic? If you're cool with women giving birth to their father or grandfather's kids, that's your choice. But as a woman, that's a special kind of hell a man will never experience. And it damn sure isn't a choice you should be able to make for us. I was a victim of molestation by a male family member, thankfully, not my dad. You and I share that in common, Lady B. It could have been worse. Don't make us women continually pay for the actions of men who weren't raised right. Your rights end where my nose begins. Feed the ones born and breathing first. That's what Jesus really wants. It's the only thing you can meaningfully control. Everything else is playing God. And, well, that's a bigger sin than the deaths you think you're preventing. Right there is wisdom. But again, the sponsor of the bill in Alabama, made clear a truth about the whole thing across the nation. It has nothing to do with babies and everything to do with women and controlling women, which has been sort of a through line for the entirety of sedentary human civilization. We don't really know for sure. We have some ideas of how hunter-gatherer societies worked. But sedentary, agricultural human civilization, which is where we still are, has been an eternal job by men to maintain control of women. Even as we speak, the single best index of the success of a country is the happiness of women and whether or not they have control over when and how many children to bear. Everything else is just fluff. And added into this whole discussion, one last observation. If you went to one of these Christo-fascist evangelicals and said, do you know that there are Christian faiths that support a woman's right to choose? I dare say they would probably be A, astonished, and immediately declare that those people weren't really Christians. Because this discussion cannot withstand the challenge to people's freedom of association, freedom of religion, freedom from religion. No so-called pro-lifer, which is actually just a fetus fetishist, can make their argument without resort to some mad religious tenet. Looping back for just a second, remember, Wendy Vitter became a federal judge today, and she used to argue that, well, abortions cause breast cancer. That is not a scientific argument, and it does not withstand scrutiny. All they have is religion. And so I would suggest that the sooner we understand on our side that this is an attempt to foist their bizarre religious beliefs on the rest of us, that the whole anti-abortion movement is nothing more than a great big giant violation of our First Amendment rights. Never mind that penumbral stuff that they talk about in Roe v. Wade. The anti-abortion movement is predicated on compulsory religious doctrine. And that gets all over, all upside how utterly un-American it is. And so we'll close things there. Back tomorrow with Friday on the Front Porch. Thanks to Will and Rudy for jumping in this evening. Thank you very kindly. Tomorrow it'll be 6:23 to knock things down. That's the scope of the community-made miracle that we'll be dealing with on Friday on the Front Porch, 6:23. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious, finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room this evening. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thanks, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. And thanks always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.